All right, welcome to RSG, One Mic. And before we get into the show, this is your man, D. Wills. I want to just wrap up. We had a great on the road at the Maui Invitational, our second year out there. I just want to thank Bowman Medical Group, as well as Aston at Mahana, Aston Mahana at Kahanapali, for being there and supporting us again this year. It's been an incredible run for us. Incredible games out there. We have a lot of footage on what we did out in Maui. If you go to realsportsguys.com or Real Sports Guys on all our social media platforms, you can catch a number of that content. It was an incredible experience. We got to see some of what I think might be, as we did last year, some teams that we'll definitely see in a tournament and make runs in the tournament. Some great highlights, and some of those teams will come up in our conversation tonight as we go through our topics. But we couldn't do it without, you know, the support from our sponsors who are incredible out there. And my guy, Brian Cox, hosted us, provided us with great facility. You'll see that in some of our material when we do our productions, when we did it on site at the hotel with views that were incredible. And also, actually, we had a great conversation with Dr. Philip Bowman about the state of college sports, which is part of a series that we'll be running over the next couple months, as there's a number of these issues that are happening in college sports right now. It's in this major transition. The commissioner, Delaney, who's retiring from the Big Ten, mentioned recently on Coach K's show podcast that we're in the middle of a major transition in college athletics. In some ways, he was saying it's much needed, but you know, there's a number of issues that we need to explore as we're looking at that. So Dr. Bowman provided us with some insight on just also thinking about some of the psychological impacts and effects that happen with these young people as they're taking on these demands at this point in their lives. That we got to remember, many of these kids are making some major decisions at ages where they're transitioning from late adolescence to adulthood. And so he offered that perspective that we normally get when we have these conversations. So please check that out. That was our first installment of State of College Athletics, College Sports, that we want to share with you guys. But hey, you know, we're here with this show tonight. And as I like we call it, this podcast, it's tis the season. Because this is an interesting time of year in college sports where a lot of things are happening. And this episode, we're going to touch on a lot of it. But I have an incredible group of co-hosts who are going to be here with me tonight, and we got to bring them in and introduce them before we get into the podcast. So let me start. With my man, Carl Hampton, Carl B. Hampton from Southside. Carl represented us over there at Camp Randall for that Purdue game. Carl has been a regular contributor.
Yes, sir.
Tonight. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm blessed. I'm blessed in Janesville right now on a work trip, but on the downtime, I'm with RSG all day, and D. Wills, and Hank, and Darnell, and we're going to have a good time and rap, and look forward to the conversation. It's a great topic tonight.
Well, and I want to hit you real quick before I go to the other two. You know, you were there to cover and saw the Badgers against Purdue, and then, you know, they went on the road and beat Minnesota. Now they're in a championship game against Ohio State. You know, the Badgers have kind of had a weird season, but was there anything in that Purdue game you saw that led to you believe that, you know, that they would have that kind of – they had a pretty good showing against Minnesota, up in Minnesota, against a really good, formidable team?
Yeah, I think that Cone is playing better as far as it goes. He's showing reading the pocket better, reading the defenses better. And but I'm concerned about Taylor, though. He's fumbling. He fumbled Minnesota. He fumbled Purdue. So the defense seems to be more livelier, but – you know, Cone showed me some more leadership, because I'll be candid with you. I wanted them to go all in with Mertz and burn his redshirt year, especially considering the fact that, you know, what I see about I don't think anybody behind JT is going to bring it next year. So unless they got somebody on the rise, another freshman comes out of woodwork like JT did. So why not now? But Cone showed me something. But, you know, let's be real. Unless Justin Fields doesn't play in the championship game, I think the Badgers are in deep trouble. But you know, it's encouraging though. I mean, I thought it'd be a much closer game in Minneapolis. It wasn't. It was a blowout all day and surprising. But JT's got to be a lot better, man.
Yeah, and that's been important. That's been something that's been under the radar a little bit this year. That that started last year. His fumbling. I mean, it was
started freshman year. He's fumbled all. I mean, he really didn't. He, I mean, I thought he was over his fumbles starting this year until Illinois game. He fumbled the ball. I was in my car driving. Yeah. And sadly, I was listening to the Badger telecast and I had to hear the Illinois people hoop and holler and clown. And but yeah, I mean, that's his problem. He's going to go pro, but he's going to lose a lot of money bumping the ball.
Yeah, he's got security. He's big time in the pros. So he's got to be able to do that. All right, I got my man, the youngin' down here. What's up, man? Darnell, man, you've been hitting me up on text. I saw your Sparty. Take that loss, that L out there, in Miami Invitational. But I had a great conversation with Izzo, who I've grown to like. You spent time around him. You understand why players like him. He was great in the press conference. We have a really good clip of him, after they bounced back and got that victory after that loss. Just in the way he talked about how difficult it has been to really try to support Cassius through all this. And all that whole time I thought about the youngin'. Youngin' out there wearing the red wing jersey, but he wearing them green drawers over there. So what's up? This place support. What's up, youngin'?
What's going on? What's going on? Man, this is probably one of the most exciting times of the year to be a sports fan, because you have conference championship week, you have LSU, you have Georgia. You have Ohio State versus Wisconsin. You have Oregon and Utah. You have Anthony Joshua versus Ruiz. Next week, you got Jermell Charlo versus Tony Harrison. You already know they talking trash already. The week after that, you have the 28th. You have Javonte Davis. He's fighting. And next week, you have Terrence Crawford versus his mandatory, which has not been talked about at all. No press, no promotion, no anything. I don't know what Bob's doing right now. But you know what? I'm going to stay on the positive side. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know you've been known to troll some folks in boxing, so
I keep it real.
But we appreciate that as we get into the boxing moment, which is a great podcast. We'll be
not trolling if it's true.
One here, we'll be dropping another one here after this one that we'll hit out there. And then now we got the man in the paint, Mr. Double Double. Happy on one side, sad on the other, because Michigan took that drastic up in there in a way that
wearing my black hat of mourning is what I'm doing right here. So y'all can see this is my black Michigan Memorial hat right here. You see, this is what happens when you're in mourning, when you again take another drastic one. You know,
hey, Davis is in the building, y'all. Yeah, I hear
it. Look here, I want to take this opportunity. I hope everybody ate real good last week. I hope y'all got y'all stomachs full. I hope y'all loaded up on sweet potato pie. I said sweet potato pie, not pumpkin pie. Y'all know what I
mean. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Bring it down. Okay. Bring it down.
Okay. If you don't know how to make one, then Patty LaBelle got one, got them at Walmart. Go get you some. It tastes just the scruff.
And they good. And they good. And they good.
Well, look here. And you got to go no frills for some of them. But I got to disagree a little bit with the youngin', because he said this is a great time to be a sports fan, unless, of course, you live in Southeast Michigan, which we are in the black hole of sports, okay, where we've got the dead wings, we've got the pissed ons, okay, we've got the lie downs, all at the same time trying to call themselves professional sports franchises. The one thing that I will say is I found me a shiny penny. I'm so happy I found that shiny penny. You know what that shiny penny was? I want to tell you what that shiny penny was. I found out that this year in Ann Arbor, that we have got a basketball team. That the Battle of Atlantis, while you was in Maui, D, and over here in the Bahamas, in the Atlanta, in the Battle of Atlantis, we found out that Juwan Howard legend has started. As University of Michigan, while they took a beat down against Louisville there, they took out two top teams.
They got smoked.
Again.
They want to smoke, got smoked.
Again. We wear the Black Memorial hat. But we found out we got a team that right now in December, we've got something to at least look at. And maybe, just maybe, I could take this off and put the maize and blue one back on.
There we go, boy.
I got black Wisconsin hat, bro. So I know you. I got black Wisconsin hat.
Oh my goodness. You got to get you a memorial hat, okay? Yeah. You got to get a memorial hat.
Off of the championship game, it didn't even happen yet. You ain't.
No, I'm talking about the basketball team, bro. The basketball. You saw the basketball thing? Saw a basketball game last night?
Oh, my
God. Man, bro.
I want to let y'all know something. I'm wearing this hat too much. I'm starting to get sweat and stuff around here. I'm wearing this hat way too many times.
Wear mine that much. Yeah, I don't wear mine that much. Might have to wear a lot for the basketball season, though. Basketball season 4-4 ain't cutting it, bro.
Yeah. We got a little bit to talk about that. Yeah, that's a good topic for another day. Which programs have fallen from the grace? The Badgers are struggling in ways we haven't seen in a long time. But we'll get that in one time. All right, we're going to go into the open mic session right now. And we're going to start with college football. And I love this one. And Hammer gave us a couple of topics because everybody kind of contributes. But, you know, Hammer came good and dropped some things. And I think this is a great one. Is Dabo Swinney's act getting tired? I think that's a great question. Because if you listen to Dabo, man, you think he's dying. He thinking that he got nothing. You thinking that he's still living with his mama in his dorm room. Like you listen to him enough, you want to send a check to him because you think he needs a donation. Now, for those who didn't know, you know, Paul Feinbaum, who got tired of this act, you know, said some things about this and was critical while, you know, talking about while Dabo's complaining about everything, you know, when at the end of the day, he going to be in the championship, he going to be there, he going to make a run, he going to be able to prove things on the field. You know, what is he mad about? You know, Hammer, I'll give you the first dibs at this since you put this topic out there. Mm-hmm. Is his act getting tired? What do we make?
He's getting tired because what about the non-conference? That's a problem. They only played A&M and who else in South Carolina? I mean, what do they play before? So, I mean, the non-conference is raggedy, and then they almost got beat by North Carolina, and then they dropped. They deserve to drop. That game was terrible. So, I mean, Dabo, I think, I don't know what your intel says, but, I mean, if Nick Saban retires tomorrow, they better go get him in Clemson. But the bottom line is that get a better non-conference schedule. I mean, you got USC who kept their raggedy coach, Helton, and who they're playing next year, Roll Tide. So they're not playing. I mean, they're going to go and play some great competition. But Clemson, if they want to continue playing, you know, these Mickey Mouses of the world and then play the ACC, which is, you know, basically Division II football, then, yeah, you're going to get any respect. So don't complain to me when you're scheduling, you know, A&M, who's on his bad days and all these other teams, and you got the raggedy ACC, and you want respect, and you almost got beat by Mack Brown, North Carolina. Come on, man.
And I would say the North Carolina thing, everybody expected A&M to be a little bit better, South Carolina to be a little bit better, and they were. And Miami should have been better, and Miami. Yeah. So this is schedule he was dealt, but I think, Hammer, you broke it out. It's the reality of the schedule, but they still – he's still never going to drop out of top four with that schedule because with the eye test, they still are a great team. You know, it's kind of like those years when, you know, you had teams like when Memphis was great in basketball, you know, not a great time, but you knew they were great. When UNLV was great in basketball, the conference was all right, but everybody knew UNLV was the best team in the country, even though the competition wasn't the same as playing in the Big East or whatever. So I think you're right. Next year, I think they play Georgia. You know, he'll have a chance to prove it. I think they play Georgia next year. You know, and so he'll have a chance to prove the out of conference. But I think all the stuff nobody ever thought he was going to drop out of top four. He wasn't number one, but he was never not going to be there. So I think you make great points. Hammer, Hank, what's your feeling on Dabo?
Okay, I gotta take a little bit
in his riches. In his riches.
Okay, let me take a different approach. I think what Dabo is doing here, as I listen to him, he's posturing for Clemson. Okay, for a couple of reasons. I want you to think about this a minute.
You hit the point now, that I want to hit. Go ahead.
Now, we talk about their schedule. Okay, they didn't play nobody. Okay, but they did schedule two SEC teams in South Carolina and in Texas A&M. Like you said, we thought Texas A&M was going to be a little bit better, but they did schedule two non-conference. And then South Carolina game is supposed to be a rivalry. Okay, that used to be one of those rivalries in South Carolina, Clemson, South Carolina game. That's two things. The other thing is, you know, it seems like because the ACC is not the conference that we thought it was going to be, it's almost as though there is no wiggle room for Clemson. They have no wiggle room at all. And it's like the minute they lose, they have no chance, even though they've been to the championship game now the last 3-4 years, okay? And they've won two of those, okay? They're the defending champs. Okay, and for the last time I checked, they still look very strong. And like I said, and Etienne is a player nobody's talking about.
Well, I talk about he's a great player. So yeah,
nobody's talking about him when we talk about some of the great running backs in the in college football. Okay, he's like third behind Taylor or Dobbins or someone like that. Okay, then it's Travis Etienne. The other piece though that I think why Dabo is making so much noise is because of the Alabama bias. Okay, now I don't. If you watch the LSU Alabama game, yes. If you watch the Alabama bias, because when Alabama lost to LSU, the talk wasn't about how great of a win that was for LSU, but what could Alabama do to get to the college football playoffs even after that loss? Now the reason why that set Dabo off is because, like I said, Clemson played Texas A&M. They played South Carolina. Who did Alabama's non-conference? Marathon Oil and the Walmart Cashiers Union. That's the thing. Okay? You cannot get upset with him for posturing on that because they gave Alabama wiggle room. Clemson didn't get no wiggle room. And see, this is why Dabo – see, this is the same Dabo that lost his mind when he became the Clemson coach and was talking and tried to dispel that Clemsoning, which meant choking games off at the end. Okay, so now he's on the other side of that. So you got to know the totality of Dabo Swinney, you know. So he's doing this to keep his team relevant because there is an SEC and Alabama bias, which Alabama killed themselves when they lost to Auburn in the Iron Bowl.
And I was surprised they dropped him out of the top 10, to tell you the truth. I was so surprised they dropped him out of the top 10 when they dropped him. I was like,
If Tua didn't get hurt, they wouldn't have dropped him out the top 10.
I'm telling you. True. So before I give my perspective, I think, Hank, you were going towards where I was going, but you didn't quite finish it. But let me hear what you got to say, Darnell, about Dabo.
I have to agree pretty much with what Hank was saying because how far do you think in the future do they schedule these games? Because back when they scheduled this game, I bet you Texas A&M was a solid football team. That's back when they had Johnny Manziel in them. And back when they was a top 15 program, top 15, top 20 program, South Carolina, they probably did have Jadeveon Clowney. They probably were not the mediocre programs that they are now when they scheduled them. Like you said, next year they're scheduling Georgia. And Dabo Swinney, he has to talk up his team. He has to stand up for his team because nobody is talking about Clemson. This is something I have to
Vegas talk about Clemson. That's not true. Vegas talk about Clemson.
They have T. Higgins. They have Amari Rodgers. They have Justin Ross, Travis Etienne, and Trevor Lawrence. Like
Isaiah Simmons too. Yeah.
The entire year. I'm telling you, one of these teams is going to walk in there and play Clemson. Everybody's going to say, "Oh, LSU." Clemson might walk in there and beat them by 3 touchdowns. I don't know.
And you guys are making some great points about this. And you know, what's crazy about it is Texas A&M has Jimbo Fisher.
Yes.
Here for a lot of money. Yeah. And But Jimbo Fisher came with a price. And so that was supposed to be – you had all the facilities. You think Texas A&M is going to be a better team. So Dabo, that's not his fault that Jimbo Fisher's not doing his job. But this is why I think he's doing this. This is what makes it. This is all about motivating his team. Where Dabo is the best is the us against them mentality. He does this better than anybody I've ever known. Like that, by the time you done, Dabo got you thinking about it, said something about his mother, and got the team rallying about it. I mean, this is the guy who's created a situation where he had several first-round defensive players decide to stay another year and rather go with their money. Like, this guy is the referee. And this is all about his team. This, everything he's saying in the media, he's looking at that camera. He's looking at that camera. He's speaking to all those guys you just talked about. He's speaking to all of his players. He's saying they don't believe in us. He's because he's got to motivate them. He got to keep them from getting bored. And so his whole thing right now is everything he says in the middle of that camera is to let his team know that they think we're going to lose. They're waiting for us to drop. Like, that is his whole point. And all that other stuff, it might be true, extracurricular, but when he look at that camera, he's not speaking to anyone else but those kids. And he reminded them that, you know, people are waiting for us to go back into our shell. They wait for us to be that same old Clemson. They wait for us to lose 3 or 4 years in a row because we'll never get the benefit of the doubt that they're going to give to Alabama. And so we got to stay on charge. So, but at a certain time, he got to realize you're a Cadillac program. You're a Mercedes program. You getting all the 5 stars. You locking down South Carolina. You locking down some of these fertile. You're dipping into Georgia. You getting these kids from all the country. You've created this environment. And you're almost like the Patriots in which you can manage injuries because you don't have any competitive games. It's like being in the AFC East. It's like you only have to play those one meaningful games every once in a while in a year. And so he's got the perfect system. You know, he gonna complain about it, but he like it. Right, he can keep people healthy. He can manage around things, and then he can all gear up, and he can even plan 3 or 4 games ahead. Now he'll never say that, but he's probably already planning. They're already planning for the combinations they might get in it. Like he's got an advantage probably on scouting right now, right? If the other team don't, because he know he gonna win his championship by 30. so he's got better. So much going he on better. Right now that he's got such an advantage over everybody right now until programs like Miami and Florida State find their way back. He's got all kinds of advantages. But I love the fact that he gets under people's skin. And I do say he wearing people down. But the only reason he's doing that is because he's talking to his kids. All right, y'all. BCS is here. This is our last one before we get to the teams. They came up with their top six. Obviously, the Buckeyes are still on top here. You got LSU 2, Clemson 3 with Dabo screaming. You got Georgia 4. You got Utah 5, Oklahoma 6, and Baylor 7. Then you get to Wisconsin, Florida, Penn State, a lot of these teams, Auburn at that point. Looking at the top six, starting with you, Darnell, would you have made any change any different in that order in the top six? Or is that you agree with how they've kind of laid out this top six?
I'm sorry, you said Clemson, LSU.
So we got Ohio State at 1, LSU at 2, Clemson at 3, Georgia at 4, Utah at 5, Oklahoma at 6.
Yeah, that's the six. Those are the six teams to me.
But, in that order?
No. Well,
what order would you have it in?
LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma, and then Utah.
In Utah. So you would switch those.
Bet.
Is that what you would have, Carl?
Yes, definitely.
And what about you?
You read my mind.
Not me. Not me.
I think Ohio State is the most dominant team on both sides of the ball.
I look at
LSU has the toughest schedule.
If you're going strictly on eyeball tests, okay, and when I looked at the top six, yes, I've not seen anybody look as good as Ohio State. I hate to say it, but they are the most dominant team. Next, because of strength of schedule and the games that they won, is LSU, okay? Then I've got Clemson. My number four team is Oklahoma. Why do I have Oklahoma there? Because, see, here's the thing about Georgia, all right? Georgia gets a lot of play, okay, in SEC, but they are a team that is suspect. Kirby Smart is going to make a bad decision in a close game. Sure, my name is Hank Davis sitting here before y'all. If you think I'm lying, go look at the times that they've had Alabama by more than 2 scores and figured out a way, okay? Games in the middle of the season, they ain't got no business losing, okay? And all of a sudden, they're the number 4 team. I totally disagree, okay? They're going to get dismantled by LSU. You watch this game. And if it's a close game, y'all watch this. No dog in the fight, but I guarantee Georgia plays a solid game for 3 quarters, okay? Kirby Smart is going to do something that's going to make you say, why he calling that play? And they're going to figure out a way. What the hell is he doing? We're going to figure out a way to blow it. That I can't put them there, okay? I think the Oklahoma and Baylor game, you know, that just don't have a whole lot of cachet. But you're going to – I put Oklahoma at number 4 because of Jalen Hurts, because of that offense, okay? I don't see anybody really outside the top 3 that is formidable to me to win a national championship. But the dark horse that nobody really pays attention to is West Coast after dark, and that's that team out there in Utah.
That's a solid man. Football team. They got that very tight end they got. Oh my goodness!
They're a very physical team. They run the football. They try to punish you. The problem with Utah is they just are not as talented as the teams in front of them.
That's right.
That's it. That's the only thing. But I've got Georgia as number 6, and I got Baylor at number 7. Okay, that's to let you know my confidence level in Georgia. I'm just telling you, when y'all watch this game, it's going to be very competitive, and then Kirby Smart is going to be y'all going to say, "Damn, how he get keep that job?" Because he has blown more championships in his short tenure at Georgia than he's won them.
Yeah, Georgia is like, man, Georgia loses more big games and gets more credit than anybody I've ever seen.
Right. Kirby Smart should be on the can't trust it list.
Your boy Rick and Kirby Smart, they've lost more big games than anybody I can understand. So I'm with you, and I think Chase Young is such a different – like, offensively, Ohio State got players, but Young is such a problem.
And he had a problem last week, though.
Yeah.
Was he a problem last week? Where was he last week?
He opens up everybody.
Against Michigan on milk carton.
Well, Michigan.
We ain't talking about Wisconsin. He tore Wisconsin up.
But I'm telling you right now, Michigan towards the end of the season was performing at a very high level. They got a defensive coordinator who hasn't figured out that you need the game plan.
Don Brown needs to go. He needs to go.
He gone. So yeah. Don't get me on there. Don't get me on there. He got a defensive coordinator that's self-checked. But we'll work on that later on. So I could see LSU. Look, the Dick Orgeron thing just threw me. Because every time I interview, I love him, man. I'm in love with Georgia. Go Tigers. I mean, I'm with LSU. I think LSU Ohio State would be a great game, but any of those top 3 are going to be a great game. You know, the sneaky team, Utah, I think Baylor is sneaky in a lot of
games. Baylor is a good team. Matt Rule can coach. The only problem is the Big 12, though. It's like the WAC 12 and the Big 12. I just can't deal with the WAC 12 and the Big 12, man.
I think Baylor would play more traditional defense than people think. Yeah. I think they can do that. Oklahoma's defense is just a problem.
Yeah.
And they just can't stop anybody. And these top teams, if you can't stop, like if you can't play defense against LSU, Ohio State, or Clemson, you in trouble.
Yeah.
So I think they will struggle a little bit, even though Jalen, I think, is big game. He's a big game kind of player. So we'll keep a run on this. Look, I got one thing to say.
I don't think you can count Georgia out. I've seen a lot of people
say
Georgia is a lot to lose this week. Okay. I don't see it.
They got great talent.
You're not, youngin', you're not paying attention. Okay.
I am paying attention.
They are talented. They've recruited well. Okay. I'm telling you that Kirby Smart fuckers up in the fourth quarter.
Hey, okay? Georgia's
go, Go back to the national championship game when Tua played Tua.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a game that should have never went to overtime.
True.
Okay, go back to the SEC championship game last year. They should have won that game in regulation. Okay, your quarterback gets hurt. Jalen Hurts comes in. That was some play calling done. Go look at the Notre Dame game this year. Okay, a game that they won. Go look at that game. Okay, go look at that game. Go look at the game they lost this year. Go look at those games.
Yeah.
Okay, I guarantee you, those are close games. When your talent and what you call is supposed to help you win, Georgia has lost those games. Had Georgia had an M on his helmet on his cap instead of a G, they'd have had him hung in effigy at the big house. I'm telling you, he has lost more big games. Okay, with all that talent, y'all think about it. That team drives me crazy.
So why you want to keep Harbaugh then? If you're talking about Kirby Smart, why you want to keep Harbaugh? Because
we know. Listen, real Michigan fans, if they weren't fooling themselves, know where we came from. Okay, if Michigan was being honest with themselves, they know where they came from. Do you know the year that I didn't even think about this? The year that Jim Harbaugh was hired.
Yeah.
Okay. That same year, okay, he was hired in 14, took over for Brady Hoke.
Yeah.
Guess who won the national championship in 15?
Ohio State.
Yeah.
Okay? So sure. You got a coach in here in Ann Arbor. I don't want to take over this, but you got a coach in Ann Arbor that's taking over a team who's already won a national championship. Urban Meyer was a legend who took over for a coach that already won a national championship.
Sure.
Okay? So you've got a lot to build around. So you got a coach that they expect him to come in here, turn water into wine. He ain't Jesus Christ. He's Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Okay? You win in 10 ball games. He's got to figure it out. Like, I'm one of those who have compared Jim Harbaugh to Dabo Sweeney. Okay? Because Clemson was in the same situation as Michigan was when Dabo Sweeney took over, just like when Jim Harbaugh took over. The only difference is Jim Harbaugh got all of this name behind it, but he had to bring the program back because Michigan wasn't nobody coming here. Going to school, nothing.
He's had 5 years, bro. He's had five years. No excuses.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
You said nobody had
5 years. Had 5 years, too.
Clemson started winning. It took Dabo Sweeney 6-7 years. And now
all right, so he'll win next year then. He'll win next year then?
I don't know. But I'll offer this up.
I can say this, they're going to beat Michigan State again.
No, I'll offer this up.
Well, yeah, it better.
Listen to me. State then turn back into Lincoln High School. But listen, okay, if they do this one thing, if they go and they do some benchmarking and see who is the architect of the Michigan State defense, okay, bring that defense to Ann Arbor with Josh Gattis' offense, all right? Now you got a chance to, because you got to put your defense in place to beat Ohio State. Nobody else in the Big Ten.
And you know what you do? Get Pap Narduzzi from Pitt.
That's what I'm saying. Go get you a Pat Narduzzi disciple to run your defense. Okay? If you do that in Ann Arbor, now you got a chance to beat Ohio State. That's the only defense.
They've had better running back play, but they don't have that. Michigan, when they were good, had deep at running back.
The explosive running back, yeah.
Deep at running back. Michigan was a team that was deep at running back with breakaway running backs, and they don't quite have that. They don't have a guy who could just go to the house. They need to upgrade at the running back position.
But Hammer, to your point.
Yeah, break it down.
We talk about Kirby Smart. How many championships has he won?
None, yeah.
Okay.
How long has Kirby Smart been at?
but at least he's getting in the CFP, though. Harbaugh ain't getting the CFP, bro. I mean, the last great team he had was at Stanford, my alma mater. I love me some Jim Harbaugh, but I'd rather have being the coach of Chicago Bears, except for tonight's different because we killing Dallas tonight, so.
Kirby Smart at least went to the college football playoff.
What's up
and
now?
Figured out a way to lose that too. He's got more talent than Michigan has got.
He's got more talent than
Michigan. More talent than Michigan. I agree with that.
He's got more talent than Michigan.
He's been a top five in recruiting almost every year since Jim Harbaugh's been there.
Listen,
You
cannot look at that stuff. Look at what you see on the field. Look and see what you see on the field, young man.
Y'all just love Jim Harbaugh, Michigan, and
let's look up the recruiting rankings from last.
I mean, you can get the buyout. The buyout can be bought out, man. It's Michigan. The buyout can be done.
I'm not going back. That works.
All right,
here we go.
You talk about fit. Harbaugh don't fit, bro.
Let's move on to the NFL.
It's like OJ's love. It don't fit, man.
Let's come back to the NFL. Let's go back to the NFL. All right. Riverboat Ron finally got fired in Carolina. Okay, let's start with just summarizing, you know, what he did in Carolina in terms of his coaching. Did y'all feel about that? And then who should hire, you know, right away?
Giants. That's already done. Gettleman's there. Unless Gettleman gets fired, that's the next coach for Giants.
Nah, I think he should be hired by the Lions.
The Lions ain't going to hire
the Lions going to hire somebody from the Patriots tree.
Oh, no, they're not.
Yes, they are.
They already got one from the Patriots tree, and that's a sour tree.
I think McDaniels could do one. McDaniels could do one more.
Who from the Patriot tree has really been successful?
Nobody. Bill O'Brien. Yeah.
He's been successful.
People criticize his decisions.
He made the playoffs. You know what he did? He luckily listened to Dabo and got Deshaun Watson. That's about.
He was before Deshaun Watson.
He's messed up. You're talking about somebody who's messed up games. Bill O'Brien's messed up more games.
He made the playoffs.
Bill O'Brien should go to Georgia. He should go to Georgia and just continue.
He ain't going back to college.
Of that. If O'Brien is your best example of a coaching tree, there is no tree. All right. So you say he should go to Giants.
As a shrubbery.
Bill O'Brien's a good coach, but that's I can't defend Patricia. I can't defend Mangini, Romeo. I can't defend him, McDaniels. But Bill O'Brien's a good coach. We did Penn State was unbelievable. Unbelievable. He get in.
Oh my goodness,
Bill O'Brien, man.
Oh,
I like
my goodness. Yeah. All right, yeah. What do you think? Talk about Ron Rivera. What do you think about him with his tenure in Carolina? Where do you think he should go? Do you think he'll get hired next year?
Did you talk with me? Or me?
For Darnell.
Oh, wait, Darnell. It's kind of sad to see him go. I remember how he seemed to be a guy that was really connected with the locker room. A lot of the guys sad to see him go. But I think he'll be successful in another spot. Like you said, I'll be I would take him here in Detroit, maybe. He could be a coach here that I would accept. So I would like to see him here in Detroit, to be honest.
And I'm saying the reason why Nagy coaches so hard because he was a Bear. And so if Nagy don't turn that thing around, you know, Chicago could see him.
He turned around tonight, bro. He's getting in tonight.
He was unknown.
He was on the night, man. Dallas getting whooped.
Because he knew he was on notice as soon as he saw that fire.
Garrett's gone tonight. He might not be on the plane tonight, so might be on bus.
And Jerry, speaking of Dallas, you know, Jerry came out was talking junk about his coach who was struggling tonight, and then he started backpedaling. Now they get whooped tonight. What should Jerry Jones do, man? What's going on with Jerry, man? Hank, I know you got something to say about Jerry.
See, here's the thing. Jera has been involved with, you know, that's what Jim Rohn called him, Jera. Oh, Jera. You know, the thing about it is, you know, he wants to run it his way.
Yep.
All right. But Garrett has been just a yes man on that team for years now to me. Okay, that team has underachieved a lot. Mm-hmm. All right. He needs to have a dynamic coach like he did when he had Jimmy Johnson. Yep. When he had old crazy Barry Switzer over there.
Yeah.
You know, those guys who knew how to that could motivate those players and not just be over there and just be the main man's hand pick. Now I think Rivera will work really well in Dallas. Okay. Reason why I say that is because the man knows how to win. Okay. He's got him a versatile quarterback in Dak Prescott, just like he had with Cam Newton, okay, in Carolina. And I think that would be a good fit. Y'all might as well forget the Detroit Lions stuff. The Detroit Lions, because what do we know about our Detroit Lions? If you give them a layup, they're going to throw it over the damn backboard. Okay, so don't make no sense trying to give them something like that, okay? They would pick me to be their head coach, all right? And I would still do a better job than Matt Patricia, okay? But my point is that you got these teams that's trying to win. This is what if I'm Rivera, this is where I'm going. Okay, I'm going to look at some of these coaches that's got – I'm going to look at these rosters first. I'm going to see what I got. Okay, and what can I do with them? All right, the idea would be if I'm him, is I'm looking at if any of those coaches leave in the AFC East. Okay, there's some talented teams over there. Maybe they're not coached very well. Okay, I would love I think the Jets just got the job there. That coach just got his job there.
And he got a GM fired too. He ain't going nowhere.
You know, no, he's not going nowhere. Yeah. But you know where?
Flores ain't going nowhere.
I'm gonna give y'all something that's rather intriguing. Okay. The Miami Dolphins.
No, Flores ain't going nowhere, bro.
They
playing hard for him, bro. You see, they're playing hard.
I'll give you one more. I'll give you one more. Okay.
But I'm trying to talk to you about Jerry. I don't care where he's going, but what's Jerry Jones gonna do?
Oh, Jerry Jones.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley. You'll get another college coach.
There you go.
You'll get another college coach, a dynamic college coach.
I think he'll throw a bunch of money at Lincoln Riley.
Or Urban Meyer.
I can see Urban Meyer, too.
The reason why USC still has Clay Helton, Urban turned him down, bro.
I can't see Urban Meyer in the professional game, though. I can see
Barry Switzer in the professional game.
Lincoln Riley, I can see that. I can see Lincoln Riley.
I can see both of them. I can see Urban in the professional game.
You can.
He got swag. I think he does. He's not stupid enough. He'll get good talent around him. He'll get good offensive defense coordinator, good special teams. Bedrock, he's not going to be. He's going to let Jerry do his thing. He's going to coach. That's the problem with Jason Garrett.
It's the other way around. And Jerry going to let him do his thing. That's the problem.
He's trying to let him do his thing. I think the problem was
with last time they won,
he's like a little kid.
Jason Garrett.
He doesn't respect him. And that's the problem. That's why he's meddling everything, because he doesn't respect Jason Garrett. He got the job because Wade Phillips couldn't do it. He was not head coach. And they trying to throw the offensive coordinators under the bus. You had Linehan. Yeah, he's a dummy, but this Kellen Moore ain't better. I mean, I'm seeing him right now. They got 7 points on the board in Chicago. The great offense is the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Like Stephen A. said. I mean, I can't wait. I want to see Stephen A. on Twitter tonight. He's cutting up. I know he's clowning tonight on Twitter.
It's almost Christmas, like he said.
Well, Garrett going to be gone after this game, man. Trevor, he ain't going to be on a team flight tonight, man. Ain't no way.
Yeah, they get
crushed by the Bears.
Enough about the Cowboys. Tommy, terrific, man. People are already, again, you know, this year they've been putting the dirt on him and saying that, you know, whether or not he's going to the end. You know, most interceptions, I think, this year. In terms of his quarterback rating and some things like that, in terms of how he's performing. Tommy, terrific. They call him the GOAT, but how we see in the end, or is this really premature in terms of New England?
It's premature. I mean, the talent's not there, D. Wills. The talent's not there. They gave him a second round pick from Mohamed Sanu. Hey, I mean, that's a bad personnel.
He's won the left tackle before. Darnell, what do you think?
These guys are insane. Like Einstein said, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. These guys have been saying this thing year and year in, year out. It's over, it's over. And then the playoff happens, when the playoff comes, the Patriots gonna be there. So I don't think it's gonna be the end. The receiver is not getting no separation. Like that you keep trying to force the balls in the tight window, we're gonna throw in the
center. Preach. They run in quicksand. Preach. They run in quicksand.
But let's look at it. The nemesis he has in front of him is John Harbaugh, who has demonstrated ability to win on the road, demonstrated to do a lot of things. I mean, he's got Baltimore humming. Harbaugh has had some success against Belichick. If there's any coach who's had success against Belichick, it's been John Harbaugh.
Because especially this year, because the Patriots have a great defense, but the Patriots defense, the strength is in the secondary. They have the best secondary in the NFL. But what the Ravens do is they're going to punch you in the mouth. They have one of the best offensive lines, and on top of that, they have tight ends that are really good at blocking. And you have a quarterback in Mark Ingram that can go downhill, and they're attacking the defense from the inside instead of they're not attacking Stephon Gilmore and them on the in the passing game. So that is where the Patriots were running into trouble. But we just got to see if they can adjust come playoff time.
Another thing I think they do well that a lot of teams don't teach now that is great defense has been doing forever that I think Belichick teaches, Harbaugh teaches, a few of these great defensive coach teaches, they teach, is that they don't let you get free releases. So I think what hurts Brady is they had Gronk. When teams outside linebackers hit the tight end, the receivers get hit at the line, it throws the timing off. And I've watched too many teams coach free releases. If you watch a Belichick team, they don't let anybody free release. They linebackers will hit the tight ends. I played on great defenses in high school. This is what we always taught. It's a fundamental thing, and it's funny that do that. And everybody else just let free releases. And what Harbaugh and them do defensively against New England historically is they don't let any free releases go, and then they put pressure. And so that's one of the things that I think they do. They've schemed, and it makes it difficult for someone like Edelman and folks like that to get off and get going, and then it gives time for pressure to get to Tom. So, yeah, but you're not going to – you know, they might not see the Ravens. So, you know, they might find another way to the championship, but it might be too early to have its demise. But, you know, we got to have this annual conversation. You know, it would be nice to kind of do that. All right, let's just jump in here quickly and move some things along a little bit. The NBA, we got some stuff going on. We got a lot of conversations around what's been going on with the draft. You know, LaMelo Ball, you know, is seen as one of the top players around. I had a chance to see was Anthony Edwards from Georgia play.
And, he can ball. He's the number one pick right now.
He got some areas for development, and part of it is that Georgia's team is strange looking. But you know, very unselfish young man when he's playing. But you know, in my mind, he wasn't the best guy at the tournament by far. I would say Obi Toppin, it was the guy. His stock is going up fast. This guy is a monster out there on the court, and people better pay attention to him. And some GMs will lose some money if they don't. But LaMelo coming out of anywhere is he's been doing his thing. He's been doing it internationally. You know, who do y'all see, you know, as we're starting to start to have this draft talk, what do y'all see? And if LaMelo's there, you know, how does he matriculate to the NBA in a way that avoids this kind of thing that his brother had to go through, obviously with father and everything else, given like now you're going to have this another top pick coming out of the family. You know, how does he manage that?
So put LaVera Ball in a cage.
Okay. Preach.
In the South Pacific preach. Somewhere.
Preach.
And leave him there.
Preach. Okay. Preach.
And go get somebody to preach. Be able to negotiate with this boy that's got some debt that he can get a shoe deal that don't cost $900 that are house shoes. That they get wet, your feet stank, but don't give you no kind of support.
Preach.
That's the only thing that's going to
Like the shoes Zion wore. Raggy shoes like that. That's what I'm saying. That's what you got to do. That's all you got to do. Okay.
Did you guys see the video when Lonzo was talking about the shoes?
Yeah, I saw that.
He said he had to change shoes every game at halftime because they would literally rip apart.
Yeah.
He out there selling $900 Payless shoes and call them big baller brand.
Man, that's insulting to Payless. That's insulting to Payless, bro.
I didn't see those shoes at Walmart. I saw those shoes at Kroger's. That's not bad. Okay, they was in the produce section.
I was gonna say things, but Kroger's, that's good. That's good. That's
they
true.
Was at Kroger's. They was right next to the produce section.
Disposable.
Big baller brand.
No, but D. Wells with LaMelo. I mean, I think he's mature. The fact he's overseas right now, but again, LeBar's got to get out the picture, man. LeBar has been a big problem, and I mean, you see it with Lonzo. You see it with Jello, well, he's not that good, but yeah, again, LaMelo will probably go. I think he's projected probably top five. He's gonna probably get somebody take him higher, but I mean, LeBar's the guy at the picture, man. I mean, that's the problem. LeBar needs to go. So we got
James Wiseman, who is playing at Memphis, right? And he's sitting out right now. He's going to come back in a few games.
Over some mess. That's the worst rule ever. How you going to be a booster and Penny Hardaway? How you be a booster and you pay Hardaway? I mean, it make no sense. I mean, they just punish these kids. And you're going to have more R.J. Hamptons, more LaMelo Balls. You're going to be like, forget college. I'm going to go overseas. I'm going to get my money. And I'll get my profile. I'm going to get streamed by these people anyway. I'm going to get paid anyway. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. The college game better change quickly. You got more people who are going to be like the brother on brother on Portland. You know what I'm talking about?
Anthony Parker.
Cats like that. I mean, they're tired of this mess, man. Yeah. They mistreat these kids. And you got people like Chase Young. Can't take a girlfriend to the bowl game. They're going to suspend him. I mean, come on. Kids are broke. And then you want to make them broker by hurting them and suspending them.
So when we got the projections on something, we got Wiseman, we got Cole Anthony, we got Anthony Edwards, who I got a chance to see in Maui, be out there, who is an interesting pick when you look at that. I believe they got LeVar Ball.
LaVar.
Every say LaVar. Y'all got LaVar on the mind. You got LaVar.
He wouldn't go one in the ball draft. So let's make that clear. But go ahead. He wouldn't go one in the ball draft. Yeah.
LaVar said he could beat Jordan. So that's how I got confused.
Guy couldn't play it all with Washington or whatever. He got no runner in Washington. Play. Whatever.
You got so let me pull up a little bit. Who else we got on this? ESPN got their little board here. So ESPN's got LaMelo at the top. You got Hampton. You got a kid from Israel. You got Nico. Now this kid Nico Manning from Arizona.
He can ball. Yeah, he's scoring. That kid. He's soaring.
You got Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky.
He can ball from Kentucky. Yeah, he can ball.
Jade McDaniels from Washington.
And yeah. Then,
Tyrese Halliburton. From
Iowa State.
Yeah. And guess where he's from? Wisconsin.
Yes.
another great guard person he couldn't get. Another great guard person they missed on. Yeah.
Man.
And that's why we're 4-4 right now. We can't recruit.
At 15, I got this kid from a teacher from my niece's high school, Isaac Okoro from Auburn.
Yeah.
Watch him play in high school. He's a baller. He played at Auburn. We're going to sneak up on it. So I think we got more time on this that we'll be able to kind of see this stuff going. LaMelo is obviously doing his thing. I think some other kids are going to make their way up into the thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think some team is going to get Anthony Edwards and be very happy because of it.
Yeah.
Because he had a shaky first couple of games, so people were thinking maybe he's not the guy he is. But I saw something when he got hot against Michigan State.
My goodness.
he's shown flashes of a problem. And I like Obi Toppin too. I think Obi Toppin's a problem, but I don't know how his size is gonna translate to
the to the pros. Yeah,
that's my only.
Oh man, he's 6'9" and can play big. I mean, he was playing against Azubuki and Obi's own. But he can step baseball. I mean, he's hitting J's. I didn't think his outside game was as good as it is. He was knocking down J's consistently. Somebody will get fired if they don't draft him. I'm going to say I saw him up first. He was easily the most dominant cat there other than Azubuki. Like, he was – like, people paid attention. Guys on the floor did not want to get dunked on. But he was J'ing them out. And when he hit that J against Kansas and looked at the bench before he hit bottom, he must have winked at Bill Self. No.
He got that
kid back. Is for real. I'm just going to play it right now. All right. We're going to move on. We're going to skip it. Let's get into our boxing cipher. Look at our boxing moment a little bit. We're going to isolate a little bit here and put Darnell in the middle. We had some great stuff going on in the boxing. But, Darnell, I want to hit with you real quick. I want to start with the fight we just saw. Bob Squad! Ortiz was on him, boom, boom, and in one split second, what separates Wilder from anyone was that ability in that right hand to put you to sleep. Because up until that point, Ortiz was doing his work. He was following the plan.
Yep.
Reflect, man. Give me some reflection on that fight, man. And to me, it was a great fight. I was scoring Ortiz ahead in that fight in the moment. Where everything changed.
Yeah, in my opinion, Ortiz was up. He was up big. I think he was up 5-1 on my card. But the thing about Deontay Wilder is, when he approaches a fight, he doesn't approach a fight to win rounds. He approaches the fight to knock you out. So everything he's doing, he's studying you, he's calculating, and he's setting you up. So as the rounds are going on, he was doing some things that you might think, what is he doing? Like, he's like how he throw the left hook over the shoulder. He's doing little calculations to say, okay, when I did this, you reacted this way. So he was setting him up, and he did something. He did the old Tommy Hearns move to knock him out. He hit him. He overshot the jab on purpose to the left to make his head to make him move to the right into the right hand. So he's a very calculating guy, and he is more precise than people give him credit for. He's more of a thinker than people give him credit for.
Yeah, and you could see him setting it up, but you can also see that Ortiz was really following his game plan in a way that I think most people thought he was not going to get as disciplined. You know, it was easy to have moments where he could have gotten big exchanges, but you could see he was really following that game plan and with great discipline, and just, you know, had a split second where he was.
That's the Cuban schooling. The Cuban school. Yep.
Yeah, and so when you look at Ortiz in this loss, I mean he gained a lot of credit. But if you gain credit being a loss, he gained it. What do you see if you were advising him? Where does he go next with this? How does he find a way in the game?
It's tough because nobody wants to fight him. So who's gonna step up and fight Luis Ortiz? It's gonna be Anthony Joshua. Is it gonna be Andrew Ruiz? Is it gonna be Tyson Fury? Is it gonna be Dillian White? We don't know. He's been looking for fights in the past, and he's not been able to get them. So he's getting up there in age, so I don't know. And he definitely wants to continue fighting. But he might have to just keep beating up on these lower-level guys until he has to move his way up in the rankings for the other section of bodies, other than Deontay Wilder, because I guess that's the matchup that – we feel,
and that says so much about Deontay. When you look at it, that says so much about Deontay that we have to really appreciate is that he doesn't duck in ways that I know you've been very critical about Ducky, because you know he will fight all comers, and to be willing to fight this guy twice and put him on the line says a lot about Deontay Wilder and who he is. In some ways, you know, whether he is the lineal champ or not, I feel like he's the people champ. You know, in a way that he's put himself on the line, and not, and almost for him, he's not concerned about if you're on the wrong side of the street or not. He's concerned about getting the best fight he can get, which in this day and age is, I think, appealing to a lot of boxing fans.
Right. And, oh, wow. You saw Carl, he just takes the group. He said, what happened to Wilder's brother? I guess the game's not for everybody. Let's just say that. And all due respect, I think Marcellus should probably fight some of us, to be honest, because I don't want to see him just out here just getting knocked out. This is the second time getting knocked out, actually. He's a prospect, and if this is really what he loves to do, he can keep doing it. But I don't think he's that guy. He said he took the fall. Oh, my God.
You said the game's not for everybody.
Not for everybody.
And we're gonna find out in this next big heavyweight fight. We got the other side of I guess we were talking about this a triangle, right? We got the other side of this triangle, which is gonna be Joshua and Ruiz, the rematch. And we're gonna find out if the game is for Joshua. You know, it was great. There was I saw this great breakdown of the fight that included so many different experts. You had Holyfield and you had all these people talking about each of these rounds. It was well done. I watched it the other night, and people talking about, like, Sylvester Stallone saying, you know, at the moment he's standing in the corner, you could sense that he was like, everything was around him and he really didn't want to come out of that corner. I mean, the way they were breaking down each moment, the psychological aspects, and as you was watching the video, is Joshua a front runner? Can he do what Lennox Lewis did after getting knocked out? You know, Lennox came back like a beast, but Lennox got a different kind of makeup. You know what I'm saying? Does Joshua have that makeup? When you talk about this fight, and Ruiz, I mean, I remember watching before the fight, I remember telling him, like, man, this guy got hand speed. Remember, we were talking about this. I didn't know if he was going to win, but this guy got uncanny hand speed. What do you say about this fight, the second fight? And it's going to be in Saudi Arabia. It's going to be at 11 o'clock in the morning here. I mean, it's got all kinds of weird stuff.
It's going to be at 5 in the afternoon. It's going to be during conference championship week, man.
Okay.
So, Anthony Joshua, what he needs is a sports psychologist. Boxing is a sport that reveals a lot of things in character, I guess. Like, it'll bring out what's within you. So, after the first time Anthony Joshua got knocked out and he went to the corner and he asked his coach, he was like, Rob, what did he hit me with? That's something you just don't hear. You don't hear him. He was like, what did he hit me with? And, another thing that happened was he got knocked down and he spit his mouthpiece out, right? He was probably five, and he kept looking at his corner, kept looking at his trainer, and it seemed like he wanted them to stop it. So, it reveals a lot of things like that. Like, Is this trainer somebody that is good for you? Because he should, in my opinion, he should have listened to Lennox Lewis. Lennox Lewis, a few years back, he said that he said that you can't take the same coach with you to the pros that you had with you in high school. You know what I'm saying? You can't have the same guy. You can't have your JV coach you in college. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Robert Crackett might not be the guy that could take him to the next level. And it seems like he was just unprepared for the fight, in my opinion. And one thing that concerns me about this next fight is it's in Saudi Arabia, of course, and the ref is a notorious ref for the last for he in fights in the past, he is a guy that doesn't allow inside fighting, right? He's gonna be all over the place. He's gonna be breaking them up as soon as Andy Ruiz gets to the inside. So I think if you're a betting man, I would bet on Anthony Joshua getting a decision, because I think he's probably gonna try to box on the outside and hold, and the ref's gonna just break it up every time. But the only problem with that is 12 rounds is a long time to try to survive. So I don't know if Anthony Joshua can stay away for 12 rounds or not. That's gonna be the interesting part of the fight. But that is a detail that is not a small detail.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, a referee can have so many things to do with this, and that can determine what a style is like. So, hey, if we are we got the charlos. You know, you can't have this without talking about a charlo. So tell us what's up going on with the Lions.
Lions holy. The big charlo, Jamal Charlo, he fights this week, actually. He fights this week, the same day, at night on Showtime. He's fighting Dennis Hogan. Dennis Hogan is a guy, not a lot of people might know him, but he, if you do, he fought, his last fight was against Jaime Munguia, the 154 champion at the WBO 154 champion. And a lot of people, most people think that Dennis Hogan won the fight, and most people think it was a robbery. I don't claim, in my opinion, close fights shouldn't be called robberies, but I think Dennis Hogan probably won the fight, in my opinion, as well, too. But this is a dangerous fight because it's not a dangerous fight as far as I think Charles will lose. I think Charles will still win this fight pretty handily. But this is a fight that is not necessarily going to be easy to look good against. So that's the only thing, in my opinion, to look at for Charlo.
Well, hey, we've got a lot going on it. You know, we're going to be hitting more on the boxing moment. We want to give everybody a taste of what's coming up. We have a lot of other big fights. We're going to be posting a much longer a segment with myself and Darnell. We got Javante. We got a whole bunch of – we got Crawford we're going to be hitting. So make sure you go to realsportsguys.com to catch a lot of stuff that we're going to be hitting in boxing here. We're going to give you a taste. We got big fights coming up this weekend. This is why this young man has become one of the best in the business in this area with a boxing moment with my man Darnell. So we're loving it. We're going to move into the cipher. One of the things is part of what we talk about, you know, tis the season. This is the season for a lot of changing with college coaches and executives and ADs getting fired and, you know, across sports, across these next few months and changes and all kinds of things happening. And we still don't see people of color. We see changes. We don't see the diversity. And we want to spend a little bit of time here in the cipher and talking about a couple of areas where we're just seeing some issues that are not being addressed. And my man Hammer actually raised one. I think this will be – I know Hank will want to jump in on this. But, you know, we talk about a lot of sports, but we don't talk about diversity in terms of executive positions in baseball. We have 70% of the players on the field are folks of color. You do not see diversity in the GMs and the front offices of the MLB. We talk a lot about football. We talk a lot about basketball. We talk a lot about college sports. But baseball is something that we don't talk a lot about in terms of the diversity of this. Hammer, I know you brought this on the table as a topic, so I'd like you to start, and we'll follow up a little bit with Hank and to maybe offer some perspective. But we don't often talk about the lack of diversity in baseball, and I know you want to bring this up.
Yeah, it's really a shame considering Jackie Robinson and the fact that people are talking about disappearing black ball player. But you also look at the fact now that at least some of the recent drafts have shown more African-American talent. But the main thing, Devine, you're in higher ed, I'm in higher ed, is the pipeline.
Yeah.
Just real talk. We don't have brothers and sisters in, they're not giving us the opportunities, and we're not in the pipeline for these jobs. We're not in the scouting positions. We're not in the other positions related to that. And so that's really the problem, is that Yes, I mean, I'll be it's just racism, no question. But if you have a pipeline that's dearth of talent of color, that's even more problematic because you're having bias in the process, as well as you have lack of capacity and numbers. That's just a recipe for homogeneity, which is, you know, white males running baseball team, which is unfair.
And one of the things I want to say that's synonymous with this is anytime you start talking analytics, there's this assumption, again, around intellect and who can understand analytics. So then that's another barrier of evaluation around whether or not folks of color have the capacity to do the statistical analytics, right? Because baseball is probably the most analytically driven game. And so it lends itself again to another layer of barrier for how people might perceive people's ability to, whether it's black or Latinx talent coming through. But, you know, you sit down and you listen to somebody like Alex Rodriguez and some of these cats who understand analytics. Mm-hmm. You don't see them being promoted in these executive positions. Hank, I know you've been doing this with, you know, Inside the Park, and, you know, we're getting Hampton more involved in that baseball side. But I know you've been looking at this a lot and talking about these things. For what's your perspective on this?
Well, if you just go back to the beginning with baseball, and Hammer said you had Jackie Robinson come over as the first player. Then how long did it take before you had your first manager, Frank Robinson?
Okay.
So how many years from that with Jackie Robinson? Then when you move a little bit further, how many GMs do you have? The one I can think of most is Kenny Williams, who spent many years with the Chicago White Sox. Okay. As a general manager, actually put a team together. You started to see a little bit more of people of color being managers, you know, your Dusty Bakers, you know, Ozzie Guillens and guys like that. The problem now with baseball is, as you say, they're moving into a more analytical role. But when you look at the demographic of baseball, it has changed dramatically, okay? You don't have as many black players, African-American players in the game as you once upon a time did. They came over directly from the Negro Leagues and really dominated the game, okay, mm-hmm. in the 60s and the 70s and 80s. Now you've got more of a Dominican, Latino population in baseball right now. So now what that does is that lends another layer of why they can't do it, okay? And what the reason why they're saying they can't do it now is because of what they're calling the language barrier, okay? Yeah. They can't communicate. So this is where baseball is going with it now, because now they're trying to pull players from Cuba. They're trying to pull players from the Dominican Republic and pull players that's of a Latino descent. But now they're saying they can't work in the front office. Why? Because they can't communicate. But ask Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, how did he communicate? Ask Ozzie Guillen, how did he communicate when the White Sox won? Okay? So this is what I'm saying. So the baseball wants you to believe that the demographic has changed, okay? But it is okay on the field. But you still have, with all these sports, that will always exist until you get you someone of color that's actually owning one of these teams, okay? Instead of just having that figurehead, okay, or that token, you need to have someone to be able to be in there that's on the team. You're going to always have this good old boy network that's going on, and that's why you don't see what you're looking for in regards to player development and scouting and this sort of thing. So you know, you're getting the athletes. Okay, that's got the color, but they can't, like Bill Parcells says, you know, if you want me to cook the meal, I should at least be able to go buy the groceries. Yep. Okay, that's not being done in this level with people of color.
And I mean, I love your point about, you know, again, what happens is people look for openings and excuses for why you can't advance. And so I love your point about the perceived language barrier, as if every Latinx person who's been in baseball, first of all, was born outside the country, you know, and not born in the United States, grown up in the United States for years and gone to high school or played college ball, even though we do have this influx of international. And in fact, those athletes who are coming internationally don't have the ability to communicate. But all those things become, like you said, barriers, as if you still, if you do analytics, you need to communicate that in multiple languages because you're trying to be a global sport. So all those things could be assets that are now liabilities for people to be able to get in the front office. And I think some of the stuff you also been hearing in the NBA, and you've heard Charles Barkley, a couple of people talking about how folks have rationalized hiring these guys who aren't even, you know, have any basketball background, MIT grad, whatever it is, it's analytics, taking jobs away from potential folks as if they can't do that as well. So I think that's a lot of interesting thing. On the college side, you know, we have Jim Delaney going out in the Big Ten. We have Kevin Warren coming in to the Big Ten. Delaney obviously has been a you know, monumental figure in college sports in terms of the business side, the Big Ten Network. I think they each team this past year just got, what, $52 million each campus as part of the Big Ten deal, network deal. When he did it, he was trying to initially negotiate with ESPN. ESPN didn't believe in the concept. He was able to then get with Fox. He's retiring, you know, at a time when the game is changing. And so you get Kevin Warren, who is a commissioner of a major, probably the major conference in the country when it comes to the business model of college sports. People can argue in other ways about success and whatever, but the Big Ten is definitely one leading. But we're still not seeing the necessary leadership in ADs. I think we're up to about 17 right now, somewhere in that neighborhood of ADs. But when you look at in the revenue generating sports, over 50% in basketball and football are black athletes. But we don't have any of that distribution in particularly at ADs, where you have most of your pathway to ADs through the business side. Corporate, yep. We talk about student athletes. You've got to come with a business background, business side, because of the model of how athletics works. Because this is a breeding ground. You know, a lot of times you can start in college sports and go to pro sports. You can do a lot of things. I mean, this is an important breeding ground for getting some of these experiences on many levels to be able to be in some of these professional spaces, particularly in having administrative experience. And if you can't get it here in the college space with the way the game is growing, you know, we see some of the reasons why we don't see it, some of these folks even getting opportunities in the professional space. What are some of your thoughts about, and we talked about pipelines, what are some things that you think can happen? And Darnell, you're a young guy, so I want to get you in on this. You know, what are some of the things that you think you'd like to see, or Hampton's talking about pipeline. We got the Rooney Rule. You know, what are some of the things that you would like to see done to address some of these issues?
Well, it's hard to know what you can do to necessarily get more inclusion as far as on an administrative level, as far as being a general manager or coaches and front office members in these different leagues. But the Rooney Rule is definitely a start. At least having people, at least having representation that can be hired and given opportunities to be hired and be seen. So that's one thing I think can be done, which has been instilled in the NFL, but that can be in the MLB as well, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things what's so difficult about sports is that they don't follow the normal hiring process. You know, they, even on the college level, they will name, like, you know, Graciano got named at Rutgers. And, you know, there wasn't probably a lot of vetting process going there. You know, they probably had one candidate, talk to him, and then next thing you know, he's it. You know,
look at Lake at UW, stunned me. I didn't even know he's a brother. Yeah. The guy that took over Coach Peterson.
Yeah,
I heard his name. I don't follow college game, but I saw he's a brother. I'm like, this brother must be bad.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, they didn't even have a shirt. They're like, he's our guy.
Yeah, it's funny because Hampton sent that to me. I was like, I didn't even know either. I didn't know that was going to be the.
I thought he was a white dude, for sure. Yeah.
I was like, the game must be changing when a brother get that kind of look after what they did, you know. And so it's
we getting fired though too, disproportionately though, man. Look at all Frank Watson. I mean, what happened to Tiger is a disgrace.
Yeah, when you talk to
him. I mean, you don't raise $20 million in a day to get rid of a brother. That just shows how our priorities are so mixed up. Then you got Charlie Strong got fired. You got
they raised 20.
Yeah, I mean they raised $20 million like a day, and people are starving. People can't. People got food insecurity, economic insecurity, housing
on their campus, and they raised $20 million
on their campus, and they got $20 million to give a coach for a buyout. It's crazy, man.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It just shows how misplaced priorities. Yeah.
Well, you know, you have that. See, and the thing about it that really frustrates you too is that scrutiny. You know, now like when you talk about Willie Taggart, that was ridiculous. You know, you look at what's going on here in Detroit. Okay, Jim Caldwell was 9-7, 9-7.
They fired him.
Now, they actually are talking about this man coming back for another year. I mean, that kind of crap. Really? What kind of foolishness is that? You know, this is the kind of stuff that we deal with. We know that we deal with the society.
He's sick. He's sick now, right? Isn't he sick?
He was sick when he took the damn job.
Okay, so I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Okay.
I mean, he coaches like he's ill. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, though, but this is the kind of things that when you start talking about it, you know, that's why, when you get someone of color in these roles, they stick out like a sore thumb, and you find yourself pulling so hard for them to succeed, no matter, you know, where they are. You know, Darnell, you mentioned that the brother that's taken over the Big Ten Network. I was stunned. I have to be honest with you. I was stunned to find out that was going to be the next commissioner of the Big Ten. But I'm pulling for him. I really hope he succeeds. I really hope. Like Ward Manuel here at the University of Michigan.
Yeah, he got it, yeah.
Every move he makes is
scrutinized, yeah.
Yes.
I know somebody knows him. I know somebody knows him and knows him real well. I don't know what you is, but yeah, knows him real well. They're both on some heat, man.
Yeah.
Well, these are some great issues, and you know, we'll be highlighting especially the college stuff as part of our State of College Sports. We're gonna try and bring in different voices into that conversation and nibble in there. You know, one of the ones that's coming up here, and Carl knows him well, we're going to get Damon Williams to.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Scholar and leader.
Yes, sir.
To provide some insight on many of these issues that will be coming up on our next edition of the State of College Sports. He'll have a great perspective on some of these issues and ways in which we can advance the work. And we got other people, as Carl knows, I got other people in the cut who can talk about these things, and we're going to get some people to go dig. But, you know, we just try to kind of lube it, get it going. You know, we bring the street level conversation right now, and then they'll come in with the expertise and drop it on. We just doing it from the barbershop perspective without, you know, dropping any words and any bombs here. But barbershop perspective.
All PG.
In all PG. As we got to do here, we can't end the show without dropping that mic. And you know, we got the vet up in here. We, you know, the way we do this, because in our culture, we always got to get a last word to the elder. And so we got to give it to Hank to drop the mic.
All right, Dean, thank you so much. Listen, and as the elder, it's my job to bring y'all a little bit of history. Okay. We all kind of know what's going on. I want to bring y'all a little bit of history tonight. Okay. I want to bring up Billy D. Williams. Billy D. Williams is like 83 years old, okay? For those of y'all who don't know who Billy D. Williams is, he used to be one of the suave actors back in the day, okay? He was one of those main cats that was on TV pumping Colt 45 as the dynamite taste, okay? This was Billy D. Williams. Billy D. Williams came out and said that he was gender fluid. He didn't know what that meant. He just felt like, you know, on this side, I feel this way. On that side, he had to go. He had to retract. He's like, hold on. I ain't gay. Ain't nothing wrong with that. But he was all bit out of shape. But you said you were gender fluid, dog. What was that all about? But I bring him up just for one reason alone. I bring him up for that little bit of tidbit that he's still around. But Billy D. Williams, the reason why I bring him up, is because, calm down, Dean, you're going to be all right. All right? The reason why I bring him up is because Billy D. Williams, when I was a kid in 1971, played in a movie with James Caan called Brian's Song. This movie was about Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo. Brian Piccolo was a running back, only played 4 years in the league with the Bears, died of brain cancer. But it really did talk about the friendship between Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers. But as a young man watching this, as a young boy watching this movie, what I didn't know about was how dynamic and how bad and how sweet Gale Sayers was. See, at that time I was so young, I didn't know, you know, it ain't like now. You know, youngin can go pull up the internet. He can go pull up Gale Sayers. He can go pull up about Billy Sims. You know, players that he ain't never seen play before. He can go look them up, okay? But this was one of the first football movies that I had ever seen. And they had actual footage of Gale Sayers playing. And they had actual footage of him scoring those 6 touchdowns, okay? He eventually blew out his knees. But he was one of the greatest backs, one of the greatest multi-backs I had ever seen, you know, that had ever played. Before your Barry Sanders and before a lot of the players of the day. And it was the character of Gale Sayers played by Billy Dee Williams that brought the character of Gale Sayers to life for me as a young man. I wasn't a Chicago Bears fan at the time, okay? I can't even call myself a football fan at the time. But it was nostalgic. And it was 48 years ago today, or 48 years ago this month, that Brian's song was first aired, okay, as the gender fluid Billy Dee Williams played Gale Sayers. That's our show tonight. Peace out.